14. John Howland. The next day dawned, but the pilgrims did not realize it had. The new dawn came, but brought no respite from the violence of the storm. In their dismal coop, the pilgrims gradually awoke, not appreciating that it was day. One by one they grasped that they were still to be confined to the blackness of the hold below, maybe for a long time to come. Their trouble was not yet over. Justice spoke with trembling voice to his sister. "How do you feel?" he managed to say. "Awful," she replied. "It's hard to breathe. My head aches. My stomach hurts. The smell's horrible. Oh, for air to breathe." Many of the pilgrims felt the same, but they knew they dared not open up the hatches. The water was a torrent above them. It was impossible to go up. The captain had warned them of the danger. They knew they would be washed overboard and be drowned at once. And what of the hold? It would most likely be filled with water and drown them all below. Whatever the agony, they just had to stay below. They had to. "Lie still, my children," the soft, consoling voice of their half-asleep mother encouraged them. "Lie still. If you rebel against the storm, you will find yourself hurt the more. Lie still until it has passed." Justice glanced around him. He seemed to be the only one with his head raised. No, there was another. He dimly saw one of the men, whom he recognized as Mr. John Howland, struggle and stand up. Mr. Howland laboriously pulled his slow, dragging way across the hold. He made for the steps. Justice wondered what he was going to do. Where is he going? Mr. Howland reached the bottom of the steps. He began to climb. Justice cried out, "No, Mr. Howland, no, don't go up, Mr. Howland, don't, Mr. Howland." "Silence, boy," came the stern reply. "I must have air. Do you hear me? I must have air. I cannot breathe. This foul stench is killing me. I must breathe." "No, sir, no, sir," cried Justice. "Don't open the hatches. Please, please." "I will, boy. Keep still and be silent," he shouted back. By now many had been aroused and were sitting up to see what the commotion was about. "Mr. Howland's going up to the main deck," cried Justice. "He's going to open up the hatches." Hands reached out to grab Mr. Howland, but he slipped their grasp. He pulled back the hatches and went out. By now Mr. Lovelace was fully awakened. He called to some other men near him. He grabbed wildly at a rope, and his frenzied hands soon had it fastened about his waist. "Tie the other end to the mast," he bawled. He spat upon his hands and furiously rubbed them together. "Quick, man, quick, man." He snatched up a great boat hook that lay in the centre of the hold, and madly scrambled up the steps after Mr. Howland. As he got out onto the deck, all he could see was a great wall of water. Where was Mr. Howland? He was gone. No, there he was. He could just pick out Mr. Howland, struggling wildly in the sea. He had been washed over as soon as he'd appeared on deck. But he managed to grab hold of a rope. Mr. Lovelace stood there. The ship heaved into the waves, and Mr. Howland disappeared into the wall of water. Then, as the ship came out of the depths, he was flung clear again. He was still there. Mr. Lovelace saw him. He frantically thrust the hook out towards him in desperation, but he missed him, slipped, lost his footing, and slithered across the deck. He crashed into the side of the ship, which beat all the air out of his body. Miraculously, he had retained his hold of the hook. Mr. Lovelace pulled himself off the deck and clutched the side. Once again, he saw Mr. Howland as the ship rose out of the water. He thrust the hook at him again. "I must get him. Let me get him, O Lord. Let me get him, please." And he did. This time he caught the half-drowned man. A watcher standing at the hatch saw what had happened. "Pull! Pull for your life," he yelled below. "Pull!" unseen men within the hold pulled with all their might on the rope. The pair on deck were dragged half round to the hatchway and yanked down the steps. There they lay in a collapsed, bedraggled bundle at their foot. The hatches were heaved together again and securely lashed. Mr. Lovelace quickly recovered. True, he was drenched through with icy water. But he was soon his normal self. He looked down at his icy hands with a kind of shock. They had lost all feeling, but he saw that they were red raw and blood-covered. He had not realized how he had cut himself and burned his hands on the rope. As his hands thawed, the pain grew more and more intense. Mr. Howland, however, did not revive so easily. He lay in a violent paroxysm, coughing and spitting for a long time. It was many minutes before he had recovered well enough even to sit up with his back against the step. Still he coughed, deep, painful coughs. "You stupid man," the cries of the people greeted him. "You stupid man, you could have cost us our lives, all of us." And Matthew nearly lost his, and if the water had got below, the whole ship would have gone down at once. "You stupid man. Why did you do it? We promised the captain." "You stupid man." One of the Pilgrim Fathers stood up and addressed the crowd. "Let this serve as a warning to us all. We gave our word to the captain. This man," said he, pointing at Mr. Howland, "this man has brought us into disrepute by breaking our word. Looky here," he went on, raising his voice. "It might seem unbearable here below. I know it is. We can all feel how cramped we are. The suffocation is horrible. Nobody enjoys the foul air. Nobody enjoys being caged like this. But we do not venture out on any account. Is that understood? We stay below." There was no sound from the people. "I say, is it understood? Answer me." A low murmur of agreement followed. Justice listened to them in silence. He whispered to his sister, "We must stick it, Prudence. We must stick it. We must." The sickening voyage continued. The sea pummeled them from below and battered them from above. She seemed intent on breaking in upon them in one way or another. The Mayflower continued her violent lurching. She would be lifted out of the water 1 minute, and then be dropped down into the depths. With relief, she would struggle back to the uneasy surface. The sea, with malicious intent, lifted her bodily, rolled her wildly as though to break her back, and then, in disgust, flung her aside with great violence. The wind added its power, whipping the sea and rain and hurling the massive water broadside against her. Meanwhile, in the darkness below, the families tried to settle down once again. Eyelids grew heavy. Voices grew muffled and thick. Gradually, comforting sleep gave a welcome respite to the people. They fell into gentle, inviting unconsciousness. Oblivion took over. As the pilgrims slept, the Mayflower pursued her wild, drunken course. She and all her helpless prisoners were by now many, many leagues off their intended course. They were battered, bewildered, and lost upon the trackless, untamed, and unforgiving ocean.